Welcome to Passion to Power with your host, Michelle Zeitlin. She's a creative producer who quote-unquote wears many hats. She's also a talent and literary manager and founded the company Morzat Productions and Management. She develops people and projects across all media. Her guests encompass the gamut, from artists to authors, actors to activists. Please welcome Michelle Zeitlin, Passion to Power.
Chris, would you say your name three times slowly and clearly?
Chris Campbell. Chris Campbell. Chris Campbell.
Chris Campbell, you are a filmmaker. You've done music videos, commercials, and a whole bunch of episodes of Chicken Girls. I would love for you to launch into how that all happened. I'm guessing it came from your dance commercial with Lizzo or with Nike or the Just Dance for Ubisoft, but I'd love for you to tell me a little bit of history about Chicken Girls, what that is, and then share a little bit about your journey thus far. Even though you are so young, you've had quite a career so far.
So none of those commercials were a result of that company I worked with for Chicken Girls. And Chicken Girls is, and then the subsequent shows I've done with in the YA space have never been what I actually set out to do, funny enough. And I feel like my life's kind of taken that path as well. Whereas as soon as I left college, I had won a student Emmy for a commercial I did, a Maglite commercial. And then that was a huge event. It was even like hosted by A-list celebrities at the Skirball Center. It was a big, big deal. But like as big of a deal that scope was, it wasn't a big deal to anybody else. Like, no, the phone didn't ring. Nobody cared, seemed to care that I had a commercial. I wanted it more than anything to be a commercial director. And then with this idea of like, yeah, you know, I'll do commercials, and then, you know, I'll just do movies. And like, just this super pie in the sky, almost unrealistic, diminishing view of, yeah, I'll just do a commercial. Yeah. And just, I'll do a movie. That's definitely what I've set out to be after college. And it slowly whittled down as a 23-year-old getting out of college, realizing the world didn't care. And like, there's, I don't think there's anything they can do to prepare you outside of college.
So you accidentally became a cottage industry.
Yeah. I feel that that's my life, because as when I was a kid, I wanted to be an actor. Uh-huh. And then I was in plays, I was in musicals, I was Perchick and Fiddler on the Roof. I sang a solo and everything. And then I just didn't like theater people. When I hit high school, there are theater bullies, like legitimate.
What?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I feel like there's a hierarchy in every clique, you know? Like, and there's a loser in every clique, and then there's a bully in every clique, no matter what it is. This theater bully is a big, tall guy. He was always like the star of the play. He could do multiple accents, and he'd just sing in your face kind of thing. He was so annoying. Yeah. He just walked down the hallways belting.
High school choir, and and now my son is taking a class at his college, and he said that he had to drop out of the first class because it was just so unorganized and geeky, but he likes this one. But it's really interesting to hear that there were bullies in the theater. I've always thought of that as sort of the welcome, peaceful yogi place. Oh my goodness. Good to know.
It's like, it's a collection of outcasts, a collection of misfits, you know? Isn't that the premise of every great story? And every strange
all the way down, yes.
Creative click. Yeah. Yeah, I fell out of that, fell into a film class, fell into that, and fell into film school. It's a weird thing to say that the things I wanted the most, and maybe there's something philosophical about that, but maybe the things I've always wanted the most in life were not the things I got or became good at, you know? Like, if as much as you wanted to be acting, maybe you wanted it for the wrong reasons. So then that didn't work out. That didn't bring you joy. As much as I wanted to be a writer director, maybe you did want it for the wrong reasons, because that's what the film school says you should do. And that's what every film class and every French cinema director you study in school says you should be. But that's not what is realistic or brings you joy. Because, like, yeah, in this business, there's a lot of downtime and there's no joy in that sometimes.
Downtime.
Yeah. There's a lot of misery sometimes in that.
Well, the whole subject of misery and joy is really interesting because that's such a part of an artist's life, right? It's such a hill and valley because it's one of the crafts that you can't really do it unless you're hired to do it, unless you're going out and always making your own content, but then you can kind of operate in a vacuum. So these days with an iPhone, you can make pretty damn good movies and pretty good demos. But at the end of the day, it's a distribution. It's an audience. You want to share your craft and your art. So it can be very lonely.
Yeah, because I mean, I do think there's an extent to that, because I know the Duplass brothers, I would always say that, like, you have a camera in your pocket right now, go shoot something. I think there's an extent to that. Like, it doesn't teach you how to work with others at a certain point. And that is a huge thing of this business, which I've seen so many people not understand. And then even if you can afford film school, then it is a great place to learn. And depending on which film school, a great place to learn and try and fail and fail and fail and just keep trying and just doing exercises. And that's essentially what they're saying there is a level of communication. And because once you get your creative juices out of the way, shooting like a little iPhone video, like there, you've got to learn how to be able to translate that or communicate that into working with others and working with actors and not just your friend who you bugged into being in your iPhone video. And not many people understand that. I felt, because I AC'd, I was first AC and second AC a lot out of college, just to pay the bills. And rarely did I ever work with a director I respected in a way. And as a first AC, you're always on set. You're always that guy. So you could always just peep and hear the little conversations, or you hear that a director doesn't understand why makeup takes an hour, or reason why they need makeup, or they need that light right there, or they need to make the light safe, you know? And so they yell because their creative vision is crumbling before them, you know? So I think I definitely picked up on things I didn't want to do. Sometimes I don't know. Yeah, I feel like those are questions people around me hopefully can answer.
You're a philosopher director. I mean, you're kind of always, it's interesting because directors are looking out in, right? But you're looking in out as well. You're your thinker.
I think so. Yeah. I try to live my life that way, like in a sense of like everything I believe in and everything. Or even like whatever self-therapy can help with that. Like whether that's good or not, I guess we'll see. I'm only in my 30s at this point. So
I was just going to ask you, did you hit 30 yet? Because for those of you that can't see Chris, he's quite a charming, attractive man with tattoos and cool glasses. Well, we both have cool glasses on. And I understand you're a Vietnamese American. Mm-hmm. And I know in our last little chat, you told me a little bit about your heritage and background. What I'd love to know is a little bit going back before film school. So you're allowed to practice and fail in film school, but even to get into film school, you have to practice, and you have to sort of be encouraged. Who pushed you in this direction? Did you have a support system? What did your parents do? How did you figure out you wanted to do this?
They always supported me in everything I did. That is like the one, my mom came over during the war and wants nothing but a good life for her kids. She'll die for that. She'll do whatever she can. She'll be destitute so that we're not, just so that we could follow our dreams. And she's always supported me, much against, I guess, the stereotype. You know, like I did terrible in high school. I did like C's and B's and D's and across the board. That's why I went to community college at the Cape. But like every little creative pursuit, not just like, hey, I want a skateboard. Like that's not something they just like let me keep buying. But like when I wanted to act, they'd buy me, then they'd drive me wherever I wanted to go. They'd buy me stupid little suits to show up to auditions as if that's what you do. I don't know. And then they've always just encouraged me to follow that. So like when the benefit of growing up in the digital age for me was when I started making little shorts in, I guess, the tail end of college and community, in beginning of community college, was when DSLRs, mainly the T2i, was becoming commercially available for consumers. And that was before that, it was all tape, like tapes or, yeah, like standard def, like tape cameras that, and, or if you wanted to pay for film, it was expensive. And so then these DSLRs just made things look pretty right out the gate. Even if you didn't know what the hell you were doing, and I surely didn't know what shutter speed was or the importance of keeping f-stop at a constant and or what ND filters were. So like you just, but it looked pretty enough to the layman. So I was able to just practice doing that and like, and just having friends in that area and like up in Northern California, just to be able to shoot whatever I want. And they bought, my parents bought me that camera, and my grandma bought me another camera after that. And like, they just, they were always very supportive of that. So.
The tats, do they have a story? The tattoos?
Not,
you have quite
some
a
few. Some do, there, some don't.
Right?
This one is, the kids on Chicken Girls dared me to get it.
Wow.
It's a chicken, and there's a severed arm of, oh, of just one of the girls, and they loved it. And so I got it because I also, that I do, as much as of that, I contribute a lot to that show of kicking off my career the way where it is now. I mean, without just doing, getting a chance to do that show, I wouldn't have been able to just keep doing more of those shows, keep practicing, getting paid to practice and try and fail. And yeah, I've been lucky in that regard. And then this one is from my last show, Charmers. The kids, again, they dared me to get one. I'm like, okay.
It looks like a devil, a vampire, has wings.
It's like a, yeah, some like demon, demon holding skull. And but I told them, you guys draw me some stuff.
This is traditional,
and I will get it.
By the way,
what's that?
Traditional ink.
Mm-hmm.
You're not a color guy. My daughter's in a band I'm actually representing right now.
Honey Revenge.
Yeah, she just love got it. Signed. Her band is now with Thriller Records, the first female band. Yes.
Congrats.
And she's got both the traditional and the full color. And
this arm's all color. In television, what gets you the job is your personality. I think the portfolio will at least get you in the door. Then, as I've heard plenty of execs and heads of development here, like we're not interested in weirdos, because you have to spend 14 hours a day with this person. They could have made the Sundance winning, most Sundance winning, whatever short film in that year, but if they're not a pleasure to be around, if they're not making their days, be a pleasure to be around, making their days, work well with others, good, or like just have good communication skills, then you're not coming back, or you're not making it through the whole run of that show.
What do you watch? What kind of content do you watch?
Watch a lot of everything. I watch at least a show and a movie a day.
Wow.
I kind of have that time, thankfully. I could write that off as research too.
Right.
That's what I tell the tax man, you know. But I watch a lot. I don't watch what I do. I don't watch a lot of UIA content, which if I have a show coming up, then I will. Then I'll kind of dive into it. And like if I'm ever on a different show, I'll watch all that show up to the point. But like when it's just my downtime, right now it's Atlanta, it's Game of Thrones, it's Rings of Power, it's all the big stuff.
So what gets you up in the morning? What excites you? Because you mentioned joy earlier, and our businesses, it can be, you know, very high and low, and tremendous emotion. And also you kind of, we have to light you under your ass, right? I mean, you can sit around for a long time and then all of a sudden it's like, boom, and you're shooting out of a cannon in terms of production time and pacing. So like, what excites you about it overall?
And maybe if we dig deep, having that purpose, like being like, maybe that like kind of encapsulates it all, like wanting to be the journeyman, like wanting to be able to tell your story for you. Like, is that just purpose? I mean, like, yeah, just having, I get so much joy from having work. Like, and like less so from vacation, you know. I was just on vacation. I couldn't wait to get home.
Wow.
After a few days, we were out salmon fishing, but like, yeah, just having, maybe that is just purpose. Maybe that's what I, you know, love to do. And like, and of course it's once you get to do it, and like once you're allowed to, again, yeah, because like I can't just direct. Sure, I could, but like I can't just lead a team on a Saturday just on my time off. But like to be able to ask to direct and be able to get the opportunity to direct, and then like it's a cool job. You're usually in some place you wouldn't otherwise be allowed to be in, and just play and pretend and leading the charge. It's a really cool thing, which I try not to take advantage of. But like, yeah, maybe on day 10 you kind of get tired of it, but it's still the best thing in the world. Waking up before the sun and coming home when it's down, never really getting to see the sunshine if you're stuck in a studio.
Do you live in Los Angeles?
Yeah, I live in Burbank.
Yeah. Well, you have some pretty sunsets and sunrises over the hills there.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Don't miss them though. Yeah.
Do you, now that you don't skateboard and you said you also salmon fish, what are some of your other hobbies that keep you happy?
Cooking.
Oh, you're a cook.
I'm a big cook. Yeah. What kind? All the toys. God. What kind of cook? Anything that excites me. Like I'll my Instagram is all just food mostly. And I just gain some inspiration from that. I mean, yesterday I bought a pumpkin pie, and then I tried to make that three different ways on a plate. And it was a pumpkin tofu puree on top of roasted pumpkin with miso and then fried silken tofu with pumpkin seeds and like a beet broth reduction. And like, I go fancy. I'm like,
oh,
I'm wow. Bougie.
Once you even say the word production, I know you're fancy.
Yeah. But yeah, like that brings me great joy. I spent 3 hours in the kitchen.
Nice.
And just forget, and then it could taste terrible, but I enjoyed all 3 hours of it.
I would like to ask you one more question.
Mm-hmm.
Look, you're only in your 30s, so it's not like it's a long look back, but if you were looking back at your 18-year-old self, what advice would you offer yourself as a creative?
Open your mind up to the possibility of everything. Stop, especially at 18, especially at 21, especially at 22, maybe even at 29. Don't think you know what you want. Don't think you know what's best for you. Don't think that you know exactly who you're going to be, the person you're going to be next year, the stuff you're going to be interested in that a month from now, the career you envision for yourself. It's always good to have that vision and that direction. At least know you're headed north instead of south. But be open to, ooh, this rest stop, ooh, maybe, ooh, this YA content, ooh, this music video. And don't believe you're better than it. Even if you're not getting paid on some job, never believe you're above it. I see that pitfall, and I've been guilty of it plenty of times throughout my life. I've seen that pitfall in other directors to just believe they're better than what they're doing. Then why are you doing it? You know? Don't just take a job and give them $300 worth of your time, because that's all you feel they deserve. Like, yeah, I'm usually $1,000, but like, I'll give you $300 because that's what you're paying me. Just never be open and never believe you're better than the job. That goes out to all the kids out there too. Yeah.
Do you teach at all?
No. Mm-hmm. I've had some shadows. I've talked to some young filmmakers in the past, but yeah.
Your tone is so interesting. A lot of the directors I talk to, first of all, they speak quickly. They're intense. You're kind of like, you know, the slower turtle. They're very pragmatic. You have like a slower pace, but I bet when you're working, you're incredibly efficient.
I think so. Yeah. I think that that's a mode I can only unlock on set, mm-hmm. is that pace. But I mean, it was a concerted effort years ago to take out ums and uhs and space filler, you know, and just let people even you know. I realize I say a lot more than I'd like, and that's something I would.
As a podcaster, you know, I spend a lot of time with my editors and posts taking out people's uhs, and I have a habit of uhs, mm-hmm. but then brilliance comes out after the so it's okay, you know. Mm-hmm.
But silence is okay too.
Silence is okay, not so much in podcasts, but we'll close the gap. I think your energy is super interesting, and I can see you studying everything. I can feel you studying everything and drawing it in meticulously. And I also like that you have a lot of respect for the people you work for and for the people who hire you. And I think that's really important because there's a lot of ego in this business. So that's really important.
Yeah. I think I would hope that's the reason why I've stuck around as long as I have, even though, I'm only in my 30s, but I've seen people come and go and drive for Uber after their directing dreams fizzle out.
Yeah.
You know, but I'd love to be good at what I do, obviously, but I think before that, I'd love to be the guy people like working with.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, I'd like to work with you. So as we wrap up, I would like to encourage people to look at Chris Campbell's work on his website. Would you share that URL with us?
ChrisCampbellFilm.com. If you're into YA soaps, love triangles, and most recently witches, then there you go.
All right. Well, I'm absolutely thrilled to wrap up with Chris Campbell and share this interview with our listeners all over the world for Passion to Power. And I invite you to check out his terrific work, commercials for Nike, a commercial with Lizzo on his reel, his work in the YA sphere, and to pay attention to what's next for Chris Campbell. Thank you so much for your time.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. And I hope that the kind of tidbits of realistic knowledge can help bridge the gap for people trying to make a living at this.
So thanks very much for listening to this episode, and please share all the episodes with your friends and colleagues. We appreciate your ratings and comments on Apple Podcasts and on social media. If you'd like more information about our programs and our special people and projects, please access www.morezap.com, More Zap Productions for Talent and Literary. And if you'd like to book a special one-on-one coaching or a group clinic or workshop, please access passion-power.com, and you can fill out our form there and make a request. Thanks again.